Welcome to another message from Life Point Church, located at 400 South Abilene in Valley Center, Kansas. For more information on Life Point Church, go to our website at lpcag.org. It is our prayer to invest in generations to influence community.
You know, I love how every generation, God has a way of communicating songs that speak to the heart of that generation. We kind of had a great mix of generational songs just moments ago. I think the reason, there are multiple reasons why God does that, but fundamentally it's this. Because unless God can stir the deep waters of our soul individually, there'll never be any rivers of life that can flow to a broken, shattered generation. And there'll certainly be no chance for the ocean of God's love to cover the earth. So it begins with us allowing the deep waters of our hearts to be stirred. When that happens, rivers of life begin to flow out of us, and soon the ocean of God's presence covers the face of the earth. And I know what you know, and that is that our world has never been broken and bleeding and shattered as much as it is now, and we can't repair it. We're trying desperately in nation after nation, but we are not winning. None of the solutions work because none of them are intended to work. Only one thing salvages and saves the heart and life of a creation of God, and that is the Creator Himself. If God doesn't touch us, nothing will make any difference. So I'm encouraging you to, when worship is on, just to let this kind of be this moment for God to stir my soul deeply. So rivers of life can flow out of me so that we can add to and contribute to that great, what we know will be a great move of God when the oceans of God's love will cover the face of the earth. I believe that. Do you believe that? I believe that. I go to church, actually, so that can happen. We don't need to be here for any other reason except that God makes us life changers. He changes our lives, and He empowers us to change the lives of others. Amen? And that'll put a smile on your face and a spring in your step and make you glad you came to church every Sunday, snow or not. And I want to encourage you to live in that way because it really does matter. I'll let Ruth Ann say a word. First of all, let me do this. I've said this twice now. I will pay for that later. But anyway, you make me look better when you stand here with me. Anyway, what I want to say is this. Those Pastor Steve and Robin are not here. I have only met them briefly, but I marvel at the work God has continued to do over the years in this church. He has gifted you with great pastors. Every single time there's been a transition, God has brought someone to us who added to that moment what needed to be added. So though he'll never hear us, though he won't know about it, we'll tell him. Let's express our appreciation for our pastor and his wife. Will you join me in doing that? He loves you, and he loves Valley Center, and I'm grateful for what Steve is, what God is doing through Steve and his ministry here. Now, Ruth Ann, a little word?
I just wanted Perfect. To share a minute. you can tell who the talker is up here.
Exactly.
Anyway, I just wanted to greet you, and it's maybe better if I stand over here out of the light. I can't see all of you, but anyway,
over your head anyway.
I just wanted to greet you this morning and tell you how happy we are to be here. And we've looked forward to it for a long time. We know a lot of people here. But for those of you who don't know us and are wondering who we are, we're very happy to meet you. And always great to meet new friends and be a part of this congregation. I can't believe, actually, that it has been 40 years. For some of you who are out there who have shared those memories of many, many years ago, it really is hard to believe that. And it just tells us that God has enabled us, and he is so faithful to do that in every aspect of our lives. The fact that you're sitting here and that you're worshiping God this morning is a testimony, and it warms our heart. It really does. So I just wanted to greet you and let you know that, and we will hear God's word this morning.
Amen. Thank you, Ruth Ann. Give it up for Ruth Ann there. God bless her. I'm likely to come down here. Does that bother anyone if I walk around the front? One, because I can't see, and two, the reflection off my head means you can't see. So we're kind of both blinded at the moment, I think. So I might come down here. In fact, I think I'll just walk down here. I'll leave my notes there. That'll either make me talk longer or shorter. So let's see how it goes. If you need to go, I understand. Don't worry about it. No, it's fine. Oh, that'd be a good idea. Right? I mean, earn your money here, Ryan. God bless you. Actually, it was in January of 1980. They asked us to come as pastors here, so we're completing our 40th year. Ryan just told me he was four, so I think there's some things that the statutes of limitations run out after 40 years. So when Kevin and Ryan were way too young to be doing it, they were riding a Cub Cadet mowing our field back here on a regular basis. I think I gave Sandy Tackett my car a wee bit before she got her driver's license. In fact, I'm not sure I gave it to her or she took it from me. That's always been up for debate. But either way, my car was in her care. And I was a 25-year-old guy, a pastor, when I came here. I'd been a youth pastor for 4 years, came here. I'm a Wichita kid, so I grew up in Wichita. And my girls must have been like 5 and 3, and we didn't know almost anything except that God had sovereignly spoken to us about coming to Valley Center. That's all we knew. And we couldn't have comprehended what God did in our day, much less what he's done in the days of the continuing generations of people. But clearly, without any doubt, God used a succession of events to literally change the trajectory of this church and its ministry. Not just what happens in the building, but what happens around the world through LifePoint Church. It's absolutely phenomenal. And we are really honored to have been a part of that. And it's true that we are now long removed from that reality, but drive by this building with a big smile on my face every time I come back to Wichita. I love this church. I love what you've become, and I'm grateful for what God is doing. Maybe just say a good welcome to all of you who I don't know, and my brother made it in, so thank you, Gary, for being here this morning and being a part of our service, and some folks kind of gathered here. I'm happy to see so many of you that I've known over the years, and I got a great warm welcome from the Jensen brothers this morning when I came in. The Jensen boys were on duty out front, and that was wonderful. Had a great talk as well, got a good donut, nice cup of coffee, so I had a warm welcome, and I'm believing God just to let us enjoy this whole little moment that we're going to experience together. What I'm going to talk about is behind me here, present day realities and the powerful demonstrative response. As a missionary, I'm kind of always tuned in to what's going on in the moment. My world is shifting around me all the time. We've been in Europe for 35 years. And by the way, did I mention Bethany and I have been married 45 years? Did I mention that? 45 years. Can you imagine that? And she's Italian, so I get an extra gold star for being in a marriage 45 years with an Italian. That even counts extra points for me. So we've been in missions, been in Europe for 35 years. And we've watched the change of Europe, the transformation, some would say. Some would say the deterioration. Others would say the dark spiritual cloud over Europe has gotten more intensely black over those 35 years. But I kind of want to tune in to what's going on around me with the confidence that no matter what the present day reality is, there is going to be a powerful demonstrative response that will take care of whatever I'm facing. I believe that. I never worry about what's going on in my world. I never fear whether or not we're going to have answers or solutions or whether the church is going to make it. The church is going to make it. We're going to make it because God has in advance determined that that will be our reality. Amen? But we want to know about those realities and also know what the response should be. Now, just for fun, and you can be thankful that I am not, you guys all know who Larry and Kay Tweet are. I saw Kay Tweet coming in. Kay Tweet has 36 grandchildren. Imagine if she wanted to show you a photo of all those 36 kids. So you're lucky I only have 3, so we're good, all right? Let me show you a couple of photos of my family. This is my daughter, Carrie, who some of you will remember. Carrie is now, in fact, on Tuesday, she's on her way to the nation of Jordan. Carrie has over the years become deeply involved in wanting to know how to engage herself in the refugee movement. 66 million people globally. 1 out of every 8 individuals on the face of the earth are away from home for one reason or another. Could be they're displaced by war, displaced by national disaster. It could be that they've been challenged to leave because of war. But 1 in 8, 66 million people in some kind of form of migration. So she's very interested in knowing how do we answer that from a biblical point of view. Because don't forget, there's been a lot of very powerful people who were somehow displaced. The 3 Hebrew children were displaced. They were in a kingdom they should not have been in. Joseph was a kingdom he shouldn't have been in. Esther in a kingdom she shouldn't have been in. God has used displaced people to do supernatural things. In fact, I have a friend named Charles Sipthorpe who says this, that God often does his supernatural work in such a natural way that only the discerning will perceive it. So we see something and wonder what it is, but behind what we see with the eye is the spiritual intent of God, and God is all the while doing supernatural things in such a natural way that we often miss it. We get caught up in the rhetoric and miss the reality. That happens to us a lot. So that's what Carrie's doing. Then I have my daughter Christy and her husband Andrew, and Christy and Andrew are living in Chicago, Evanston, Chicago, and they're doing Chi Alpha, which is like a student ministry, on the campus of Northwestern. They're working exclusively with international students. So my little girls who followed us in missions are somehow in their own way in a different platform doing something that looks a lot like missions as well. Then we have our three grandkids here. There's Hannah and Caleb and Luke. Now my grandchildren have great biblical names. My one grandson is Caleb Andrew and Luke Isaac. So they got Old Testament, New Testament, and then we have Hannah. And Hannah, though she's five, is the mouthpiece for the entire family, mom and dad included. She is so hilarious. We got a video of her last week. She's in the shower singing. It's a song. I thought she was stuck in a rut, but, you know, it's actually this whole song has like three phrases. But she's in the bathtub, shower, soap in her hair, singing, "This is how I fight my battles. This is how I fight my battles." And she's just going after it. So she's something else. And we have great joy in these kids. So they're lots of fun. Well, I want to do this morning. I've kind of given you an idea of where we're going to go. What I want to do is tell you the hope I have in my heart. My hope is that through our shared intercession and investment, that we'll see great spiritual impact and influence among the nations and the people of the world. You have been investing in us for 35 years, not just financially, but relational support and prayer support. I am praying, my hope, my deepest desire, God's deepest desire, is that through our shared intercession and our shared investments that we will see great spiritual impact and influence among the nations and the peoples of the world. That's my hope. Now, with that in mind, let me tell you what I do, because that'll be good for you to know as well. We actually have our involvement in three very specific things. You can go to the next slide, I think. Well, that's good. That's just for fun. That's 1986, and I'd already been, I came to church in 1980, so imagine how young I looked when I got here. I remember I specifically grew a beard to fake it a little bit. How old are you? I'm 20-something, I would say. That's 1986 when we left for missions, so that's how our journey began. And over the years, we've done a lot of things, but let me give them to you kind of in ranking order. Because I'm tuned into the present-day realities, one of the first things we recognized when we got to Europe was that, one, the national church is very conservative, very, very, very kind of dialed into the way they do church. So the Italian church, we went to Rome, that's where we started. In Italian churches, men sit on one side, women on the other, women wear veils. You don't know who's married to who for the longest time. You just can't figure it out. You have to follow them out the door to the car to see who actually gets in the car together, and then you know. And what I knew was that was going to be a very difficult way for people that I was going to meet to find Jesus, because I was in language school. What really broke my heart, actually, were two Norwegian girls who were 19. I had language school with them. These girls, being Norwegian, told me, absolutely, told my wife and I to our faces, we're here for 1 year. We're going to learn as much Italian as we can learn to say yes to what any Italian man ever asks us to do. Then we're going to go home, get married, and never talk about it. Well, I was the father of two daughters, and I knew what a reckless choice they were making. I knew what would happen if they put themselves into the sensual society of Italy with just no holes barred. Every door is open. I knew they were going to be in big trouble, so I did everything to capture these girls. One girl loved peanut butter, so we made peanut butter cookie, peanut butter pancakes, peanut butter on bananas. We tried every peanut butter thing you could do to get her to come to our house on Friday night and not go anywhere else. We prayed over them. I begged them. I pleaded with them. But I thought about these girls, how can I take them to church? Because they had nose rings and ear things and orange and blue hair back in 1986. So the Italian church is not going to let them in the door. If they get in, they're going to have to wear a veil. So here they are in Italy. They don't speak Italian. If Jesus comes, or if they somehow tragically have to go to heaven early, upon whose hands is their blood going to rest? Is it the Norwegians' fault for letting them leave Norway without being Christian? Is it the Italian church's fault because they're not taking care of business and opening the doors? Or is it my fault because I know these girls by name? I began to be convinced that it was my fault. That if I didn't do everything I could do, I was in every way failing God because I see a reality and I know God has a solution and I have to try to find a way to get to the solution. That was the point. So we began to just do everything we could to gather together a church that would be open to all nations. We wanted to be intentional and inviting and inclusive, and we wanted to build something like that. So we started a church in Rome, actually. And it was the second international church for the Assemblies of God. We started it, and we led it, and it was a powerful thing. It was incredible what God did in those years. In fact, we started 15 Filipino churches. In May, I'm going back to Rome to preach the 30th anniversary of the church, and there are now 76 Filipino churches in Italy alone, all born out of our church in Rome. We just saw something that needed a solution, asked God, could we somehow do something? Then I went, after 10 years, I went to Brussels, and I pastored a church in Brussels, which is the first church that the Assemblies of God had in Europe, and I'm pastoring that church, and it was incredible. At the end, we built a translation booth so we could do 8 languages in our service. I would speak English, and against the wall, I had Dimitri, who did Russian. Next to him, I had Khalifa, who did Arabic. Next to him, I had Hussein, who did Farsi, the language of Iran and Afghanistan. Next to him, I had a guy named Jimmy, who did Albanian. Next to him, a guy named Jonathan, who did French. Next to him, a lady who did Flemish, and we had one chair open, just in case we needed something else. And they wore headsets, and I'd preach in English, and they'd listen in their headsets and come to the altar and weep and cry because they're hearing the message in their heart language. It was an incredible thing. We baptized and discipled 115 Iranians who started their spiritual Christ journey with us in Brussels. Incredible. So we've always stayed in international church ministry, always. We started a network of churches in Europe back in 2004. 10 years later, I gave that network off. When I gave it off, we were at 76 churches. Now I think they're getting close to 84 or 86. Then in 2012, I started a global international church network. And the idea was that we in Europe had enjoyed 10 years of being together relationally. We had meetings twice a year in all these international churches. And we have some great international churches. Vienna runs about 2,000. Barcelona is up to 1,000. Madrid is getting close to 700. Brussels is about 700. These are great churches that have all been born over the time I've been in Europe. So I started the second and pastored the first. So every single church that's been born in Europe, I know them intimately. I know their history. I know their pastors. I know everything about them. It's pretty amazing to be around 30 years later watching all that still. Then in 2012, we started a global network, wondering if God would do in other regions of the world. So Asia, Africa, Asia Pacific, Eurasia, Latin America, Northern Asia. Would God begin to do something these other, and plus Europe, those other 6 regions, the other 5, would God begin to do something there? So we're nurturing a network of international churches globally. Just last month, I was in Bangkok, and I met with the guys from Asia Pacific. Do you know that in Indonesia, the general leaders, the church leaders in Indonesia are asking every missionary to start an international church across Indonesia because they recognize the need is there. In Africa, they call it the urban tribe. And they're going after urbanized Africans who live in big cities, who have lived and traveled and studied abroad and come back to Africa. And because the church is often rural and village, they don't fit into it so well. So they're also advocating for planting international churches. It's incredible. And we're watching God do amazing things. In 2015, the leaders of those 6 regions made a covenant that says over the next 5 years, we're going to plant 100 international churches globally. And that work is underway right now. In Eurasia, they're going to plant 33. They're going to pretty much follow the Silk Road of Marco Polo and put churches in all these cities that are gospel resistant. You can't even really preach the gospel freely there, except all these nations want to sign the United Nations Human Rights Charter, which says if you sign it, you provide religious freedom. So in Vietnam, the ushers are the Secret Service. in Shanghai and Beijing, they're checking your passport at the door, because if you're not a foreign national, you technically can't come to church there. But we're still preaching the gospel. And how many of you know that with a little bit of light, God will make it a huge amount of light? Just give him time. So we'll take what we can get and believe God to do a deeper work. So that's one thing we're doing. I'm very much involved in that one. Second thing we're doing is this, Convoy of Hope. Now, some of you know Convoy of Hope. They're well known for being a disaster response organization, and they do a great job. They're on the ground right now in all those places that were ravaged by tornadoes. They sent trucks the day it happened, and they respond over and over and over again. Last year, we were in seven disasters in the U.S. and internationally. Seven disasters at the same time. Seven. It was a huge thing. By the way, to all the you guys who do Speed the Light, thank you, all you young people who give to Speed the Light, because Speed the Light is going to buy us. They're buying us, I think, 10 new trucks at $150,000 a pop. We already laid our hands on three of them, already delivered. Yes, you should clap for that. That's amazing. So Convoy does great work, but what I do is not in the U.S. I do all the stuff outside the U.S. So my task is to lead the team that serves internationally. Internationally, we are feeding 200,000 children a day. 200,000. We're doing women's empowerment. We're doing agriculture programs. We're doing everything we can to make a difference through the act of compassion. The fact is, in responding in compassion, we're revealing the kindness of Christ. A great church leader said, anyone can do compassion, but only groups like Convoy can do it in the kindness of Christ. We live in a world where compassion matters. We have one particular problem, and it's important, I think, to know this. There's a great apologist. His name is Ravi Zacharias. We had a gathering for international churches in Hong Kong in 2016, and Ravi is one of our speakers. And Ravi said, he told this story about his daughter who works for a member of parliament. So she's in politics in the UK. She called her dad to say, Dad, I'm leaving my job. He said, wow, just like that, you're leaving. Yes, Father, I'm leaving because I'm tired of sitting in meetings around people who could do something to make a difference. And they talk about it, but never do it. And I'm finished. And besides, she said, I have been to India. And I've been to the places where women are trapped in human trafficking, sexual human trafficking. And they abduct these girls when they're little. They abuse them their whole lives. And then they abandon them away at the end. I was there where they've abandoned these elderly women who've been abused and used their whole lives. And I was there, Father, and no one was there, so I have to go do something. Ravi said to us, he's glad he's not on the phone, not visual, because he wanted to shake his head and say, oh, my sweet daughter, this problem is thousands of years old. Of course someone's doing something. But he said, my daughter has a problem that's indicative of her generation. This generation thinks with their eyes. If they go somewhere expecting presence and find absence, it's a problem. Now, you could say you went on Thursday. The guys who do the ministry to those women come on Friday. You just got there on the wrong day, but it doesn't matter. Now, the Bible says, with the eyes we see, with the heart we reason, and with the mind we reason, and with the heart we believe. It's with the eyes we see, the mind we reason, and with the heart we believe. But that doesn't work. It doesn't work that way anymore. In these days, we think with our eyes. If I go expecting presence and find absence, it's a problem. So for the church to vacate the compassion space is going to be very challenging for a new generation. They will not have any expectation that the church will build big buildings and have big choirs and have big programs and watch homeless people suffer and do nothing about it. It matters. It matters to God. It matters to a future generation of people we want to hold on to. And nothing reveals the kindness of Jesus like compassion. So I love being a part of Convoy of Hope. I'm not a Convoy employee. I'm a missionary, although I have to serve in a pretty involved position. I still, my heart is to be a missionary till I can't have the strength to do anything else. The Lord willing, when I die, I'll still be a missionary. I left Valley Center, and I love this church. But I didn't leave it because I was leaving from something. I was leaving to go towards something. And 35 years later, we're still in the same journey we started back in 1984. And by God's good grace, we're going to stay with it. The third thing that we want to talk about is 33 years of shared relationship. That just means that I've had the privilege of being in around the same people and the same folks for 33 years, which means you can go pretty deep with people when you see them over and over again year after year. Though I've been in different places, so I lived in Rome for 10 years. I've actually lived in Brussels for 22 years. I pastored the church for 10. And then after that, I spent for 3 years, I spent 2 weekends a month in Copenhagen, Denmark. And for 7 years, I spent 2 weekends a month in Malmo, Sweden. So though I've lived based in Brussels, I've traveled a lot of other places over the years. But the point is, it's the beauty of shared relationships. Now, I just can't tell you how much it means to get into someone's life and stay there. Quick exits are sometimes a difficulty. What's worse than a quick exodus is relational failure. And if you fail in a long-term relationship, it hurts deeper than we can ever imagine. I think that's a lot of our challenges, quite frankly, that relational failure is taking a toll on a lot of people in a lot of places at deeper levels than we could ever imagine. So I'm advocating that we live Christ-like lives and we stay positioned where he's put us and go deeper and deeper as long as God will give us opportunity. Can you say amen to that? Some of you are close to your grandkids and close to your kids, and maybe they're not exactly where you want them to be yet. Just stay close to them because they will get there. Without a doubt, they'll get there. So I want to just quickly walk you through this, and I have my, where did my cell phone go? Well, there it is. Maybe I don't need it. But anyway, I'll quote some scripture. I have my verses here. A couple of things. One is this. When I was in Valley Center back in 1984, I was confronted by John chapter 4 about the harvest realities. If you know John 4, you can go there, verse 31. Jesus is in an exchange, in an encounter with his disciples. Let me just read this one because it's really good. I won't read them all, but this is a good one for us to read together. And I use my phone instead of my iPad because my iPad keeps going off. I don't know why, but I've been more than once up in the dark looking at my phone thinking, come back, please. All right, so here we are, John 4. Meanwhile, his disciples urged him, Rabbi, eat something. But he said to them, I have food to eat that you don't know about. Then his disciples said, well, could someone have brought him food? And he says, well, my food, verse 34, is to do the will of him who sent me and to finish his work. Don't you say it no longer. It's still 4 months until harvest. I tell you, open your eyes, look at the fields. They're white for harvest. Add to that John chapter 9. We must work the works of him who sent us while it is day, because night is coming when no man can work. There's a harvest reality that we have to buy into. The disciples, their problem was lack of urgency. We need to start, but not now. Maybe 4 months from now, we'll get engaged in doing something. Maybe 4 months from now, we'll do something really serious. Maybe 4 months from now, I'll really sell out my heart to God and give him everything. Maybe 4 months from now. It's always that sense of delay. Lack of urgency was a problem for them. The second thing was lack or loss of vision. Lift up your eyes. Your vision is too focused. It's too concentrated. You, he said to disciples, need to lift up your eyes. You're not seeing what actually is the reality. And then your focus. Look on the fields. See, here the problem is this. We sometimes celebrate in the fullness of the barn, not the ripeness, overripe condition of the field. God is never celebrating the barn story. He's celebrating the field story. Look on the fields. People are ripe. People are ready. And you're missing it. I was confronted with that, and it powerfully touched me. It was one of those things I said, you know what, God, here's the bottom line. You have more desire to do things than I've even known. I see these realities, but I don't think I've dialed in yet to the powerful demonstrative of responses. There's stuff that can be done, and I'm missing it. Please help me to get this John 4 thing in my heart and hold on to it forever, and I would advocate for you to do the same. Do you believe it's harvest time? Do you believe that God is really on the verge of doing something dynamic? Do you believe that God's ready to change your neighborhood, your family, your workplace? Is it possible that we sometimes grow weary in all of that and we stop seeing the opportunities and only see the resistance? We see the walls, but not the doors. at least for the disciples, that was an issue. The second thing that confronted me in a big way. These generational realities challenged me. I told you the story of the girls from Norway. That was a challenge. Acts 13:36, it said of David that he served God's purposes for his generation, and then he laid down and died. He served God's purposes for his generation. What did God want to do with David that David had to say yes to? I commended you, and I meant it sincerely, for how much you've done over the years. But the work of the Lord is not done in Valley Center. And this generation of folks who live in Valley Center are not the same folks I knew in 1980. It's a different generation. There's a different need. There's a different reality. What is the reality? What do we need to do to reach Valley Center? What do we need to do to raise up a whole generation of people who can go beyond Valley Center and do great things for God? Where's that? Where's the pathway for that? What's it look like? And what do we need to do to get on that? That one challenged me. There's a generational reality thing going on. And listen to me, this is so critical that sometimes we parrot what we hear rather than prophetically speaking into the reality. You know that, don't you? We start calling things as what others say they are rather than discerning what God says is happening. And it's a problem. It's a big problem. The church is probably more political today than she's been in a long time. We're politicized, which is great. I love the support. I think it's fantastic. But it's not the answer. It's not a church political, but a church who's prepared and ready to recognize these realities that will make a difference. And then the last one, declarative realities. This one I can let go of, but just for time. But Isaiah 43:13 says, I will do a work, and no man will hinder or reverse it. Harvest realities confronted me. Generational realities challenged me, but declarative realities are what comforted my heart, that God can do his work and no one's going to get in his way. My prayer really today, I'm going to tell you one story, we're going to be done. My prayer is that God will help us to kind of build our focus around that thing. What are the present day realities? What's going on that we need to be aware of? And what are the powerful spiritual responses that can be put into play? Let me tell you one story here, really. Go to the next picture. We'll flash through these pretty quickly. This is my story. This is a Pescada revival story. You see the guy in the gray pants on the end with the white shirt and the mustache? Do you see him on your left? Does he look like anyone you know? That's the 1987 version of me. And I'm sitting at the front of a city hall with this group of men. Pescada is a town in Abruzzo, in Italy. It's the biggest town close to where Ruth Ann's grandfather came from. So Ruth Ann's grandfather and grandmother on her mother's side are immigrants. They left Italy unsaved. They met Jesus. Her grandfather met Jesus the first night he got into America. And he's the only Christian in his family, the oldest son, 5 children. No one else in the family has ever come to Christ, none of them. He prayed for them. He went back to Italy and lived with them for a year. Took them to that church in Pescada. The year he was there, the pastor says that the pews were full of all the Abenizio family. The Abenizios and the Crognalis were in church when Antonio Abenizio was in Italy. When he went home, they didn't go. So 1987, Mose, the guy in the middle, is the pastor. Mose built a new church, and he wanted to have a citywide, like a revival, to christen his new church. His wife loved English speakers and loved Americans. She says to Mose, you should invite that new young American who's come to Rome, because he could come here, I could translate for him, and the city, man, to have a young guy speak in English, that's going to be fantastic. Let's get him to come. So he invites me. I said, well, sure, I'll come. And I told him the story about Ruth Ann's family and how, oh, I remember your grandfather, he says. So this is just getting better and better, the story. So I'm going to go, and Mose's calling me, saying, you know, I can't get the documents. They just will not give me the papers. They're blocking us, and I'm afraid the day is going to come, and we can't even have our revival, and he's Italian, so he's not happy, and you pray with me, and while you're praying, I'm going to be pushing, and between your praying and my pushing, God will do something. That's what he believed. Well, it gets down to the last minute, and he's not going to get the documents. So he appealed to the guy in the dark suit on the end, on the right, who's one of the city officials. And he made a strong protest. This is just not right. I've got this building. It's all done. It's all ready. It's a matter of documents. Why can't you release the documents? Something's got to happen. So he's making his case. So he agrees to go talk to the mayor, who's in the white suit. Unknown to us, the mayor's wife was a sympathizer, which means she's Catholic, but she's not happy. So he tells her about this problem. She says you should do something. So the mayor says, I can't get your documents. I can't interfere. But why don't you have your week revival in the newly remodeled city hall? So we did. I have a couple photos on my phone if you're interested in seeing the crowd. During that week, the mayor and his wife came every Sunday. Just April last year, I was at a meeting in Italy preaching to a group of Italian pastors, like their national pastors convention, and I saw Mosè. See Mosè right there? Go back to the other flight real quick. That's Mosè. The guy sitting next to me, that's Mosè Ciccone, and it's Nuccio Cavone. Belli questi nomi italiani, aren't they? Aren't those good names? Nuccio Cavone, Mosè Ciccone. I go to a meeting. Look at this picture here. This is me. The next one is me, Mosè, and Nuccio, my translator and the pastor, 32 years later. He couldn't wait to tell me, Terry, I don't know if I've got to tell you this, but after that revival, that mayor and his wife gave their hearts to Jesus, and the mayor was an elder in our church till the day he died. Isn't that powerful? And go to the next one. And here's Mosè doing what Italians do, bringing me close, kissing my cheek, and praying a father's blessing into my ear. Now, what I'm saying to you is our hope and the desire of God is that we, through our shared intercession and investment, can see great impact and influence come among the nations and the peoples of the earth. It can't happen. It will happen because that is the heart of God. Do I have anything else up there? Go one more. Do I have anything else left there? That's it. We're all done. Get the musicians. Keep that one up there. Let the musicians come back. This statement just says the obvious. When given the chance to engage ourselves with God, if we can do something, we should do something. And that's just not financial giving. It means engagement. Can be giving. Can be prayer. Can be you being willing to say, yes, I'll go. I want to find a way to go and engage myself in some kind of mission activity, either here or globally. I just know I need to do something. The present realities of our world demand that something happen. And these present realities are going to be countered with these powerful, demonstrative realities that change everything. We are not fighting a losing battle. You know that, don't you? There's only one kingdom that eternally wins. Only one. Only one. It's not political and it's not earthly. It's kingly and it's heavenly. That's the reality. So my prayer is that in this moment, we would make a willful choice. If I can do something, I want to do something. I don't know what that means for you. Does it mean a shift? Does it mean a step? Does it mean that you stop and pull back from something? I don't know. Is God going to slightly shift your heart, realign it in some way? Is he going to be brave and bold and speak to you about a step you need to take towards him, towards something? Or is he going to confront us and challenge us to stop doing some things that we're doing because they rob us of his best? I have no idea whether it's a shift or a step or a stop. But he's definitely going to say something. So if we can do something, we should. If we do something, God will do something in response. And when God does something, watch out. Would you be willing this morning, just in these next couple of moments, say, God, I'm all ears. My heart and my spirit is open. What do you want to do? What's your desire for me? My little niece, who I'm a bit distant from, my brother's granddaughter, is a bright girl. I mean, extremely intellectual, very smart. She called her grandma not so long ago. Over this last year at university, she's gotten deeply involved in her Christian campus group. She said, "Grandma, I'm going to the chapel and I'm praying an hour at least three times a week. I was in the chapel last week and I heard someone sobbing behind me. I looked back and it was a foreign exchange student. So I felt like God wanted me to go pray for him, but I've never prayed out loud before, so I'm not sure how that's going to work." But she finally did it. The young man welcomed her prayer, thanked her for it. Kaylee had an incredible experience. She tells Grandma, "Grandma, more and more, I'm feeling like I need to move closer to ministry, closer to the church." That's a step Kaylee's looking at. It will stop her academic pathway as she's enjoying it now. And it will seriously be a shift for all that she had in mind. So it is for Kaylee. So it is for me. So will it be for you. I believe that.
Everybody dance. Everybody, this concludes today's message. We hope you can join us next Sunday for services beginning at 10:30 at Life Point Church, located at 400 South Abilene in Valley Center. To get more information on Life Point Church, go to our website at lpcag.org. And we hope you can join us next Sunday with Pastor Steve Raines.